other questions or anything else that should be announced? All right. Who is doing tonight's class? Katie! Yay! All right. Our precept class. I will turn it over to Katie then.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not mostly I am not a denizen of the Tuesday night, but I'm here today. And so a little bit about myself. I'm a retired Unitarian Universalist minister, and I was drawn to Buddhism by the Dharma. I have been a member of Brightway for about I think about 3 years. I started in the middle of the pandemic. And recently, I joined Third Act Oregon, and I'm on their coordinating committee. So, this is a new organization that's going to fight climate change, and it's for older Americans. And I am really enjoying it. So, it kind of figures a little bit in this precept a little bit. So I thought I'd mention it. This is the third time that I've taught one of the precepts. I like teaching a precept best if there's something about the precept that echoes in my own experience. For example, I don't remember the first precept I taught. I am sure it was a worthy precept, but it wasn't one that I was that intrigued by or struggled with. And so I now don't even remember what it was. The second one that I taught was the Do Not Lie precept. And I taught it because I had read this wonderful book by Anik Lemke. It's called Dopamine Nation. And her book became kind of a koan for me. It made teaching the principle very meaningful. She saw honesty as a keystone quality that held all the other values in place. So, yeah, I really liked teaching Do Not Lie. So, Do Not Kill, the precept that I'm teaching tonight, is the first grave precept. It's personal for me also. When I took the precepts, I became a vegetarian. Around the world, Buddhists are generally vegetarians. And in my mind, a Buddhist was a vegetarian. I didn't question it or ask anyone or talk to anybody at all about it, except my husband, because I needed to let him know that when I became a Buddhist, I was going to have to become a vegetarian. And he was fine with it, a lot better than some people would be. At several months after I accepted the precepts and became a vegetarian, I was having a conversation with someone else who had taken a long time to accept the precepts. They said it was really hard for them to make up their mind. And I said, ah, the precepts, that was no big deal. It was becoming a vegetarian, that was a lot harder. And then because I was having this conversation at Brightway, I discovered that I didn't have to become a vegetarian to be a member of Brightway Zen. Well, I felt a little foolish. I didn't need to do it, and yet I had upended my life. But I didn't take it back. For one thing, I wasn't going to tell my husband. You know that big change that I made in our life? Well, I take that back. And after the foolishness melted away, that feeling of foolishness melted away, I realized that I was really happy that I had become a vegetarian. When I picked this precept, it was partly because becoming a vegetarian resulted directly in probably 30 fewer chickens killed every year. It's the one action that I have made that reduced suffering in the world in a very direct way. Not It helped save the rainforest, but these animals, it had an effect on. And it isn't often that you can directly count a change like that. At the same time, I'm not going to be making an ask. I don't have anything invested in your own state of vegetarianism. I felt like it made a good example. So let's talk about the precepts as a part of Buddhism. I'm sure other people have talked about it, but I think it helps when the teacher, since we have a different teacher for every precept, it kind of helps to ground where I'm coming from. So the precepts, my feeling is that the precepts offer balance to a path that has a very holistic spirituality as its goal. I know goal is in quotes. Everyone here, to one degree or another, would like to wake up to our Buddha nature. I want to experience it. Our Buddha nature isn't about right and wrong at all. It is about an accurate perception and seeing of the world. And the precepts, but the precepts then are a good antidote to any foolishness that experiencing your Buddha nature takes you to. The precepts are down to earth rules about living an ethical life and doing the right thing. I like to look at the precepts from a middle way perspective. The middle way, in its simplest form, is a direction from the Buddha to steer between the two poles of asceticism and, this is a great word that I just learned, libertinism, or being a libertine, or sensual pleasures, or sex, drugs, and rock and roll, or a life of crime, or a career on Wall Street. It's also, for me, represents trying to find the middle way between extremes. So, following a precept in the spirit of the middle way means not going to extremes. For the first grave precept, which is do not kill, you can take it very far. I mean, Jain monks and nuns wear face masks so they don't accidentally breathe in microbes and kill them. That is pretty far. On the other hand, if one does not care at all about killing things, I don't think that's where we want to be either. Thinking about the middle way used to make me feel pretty, well, I would almost call it cozy. I would imagine it as if it was, if I was walking, as if I was walking through this beautiful valley by a gentle bubbling stream. Here I am, walking down the middle between Mount Asceticism, which is a very dry, hard to climb mountain, and this thick jungle area that represents sensual pleasure. I kind of thought of it sort of like being Swedish or living as we do here in Oregon on the 45th parallel. Frankly, it seemed easy, almost like you might want to lie down somewhere and take a nap. But recently, in this book that we just read by Rebecca Lee, the Illumination book, many of you read it as part of the lesson of last month. There was a poem that she was very fond of by Master, I am not sure if I can pronounce his name right, Senj Khan. Anyway, the poem is, "The supreme way is not difficult. If you do not pick and choose, neither love nor hate, and you will be clearly understood." But then he goes on, the very next line, "Be off by a hair, and you are as far apart as heaven from earth." So, the supreme way may not be difficult, but it may not be easy either. So let me just say that again. The Supreme Way is not difficult if you do not pick and choose, neither love nor hate, and you will clearly understand. So that sounds very easy, sort of the middle way of taking a nap and being on the 45th parallel. But then in the very next two lines, he says, "Be off by a hair, and you are as far apart as heaven from earth." So the middle way is not necessarily the easy way either. And I was really struck by that. I kind of had an aha moment when I read that. And it's kind of funny because Rebecca doesn't go on and talk about those last two lines. She quotes them, but she talks more about how you don't want to pick and choose, neither love nor hate. But this master went on to say, "Be off by a hair, and you are as far apart as heaven from earth." So when we are talking about a precept and analyzing it from the middle way, yes, the middle way will bring you away from the extremes, but it still may be tricky because you can find yourself off by a hair. So anyway, I thought that was an interesting way to think about it. So here, let me get back to that grave precept, the do not kill. The precept is very direct when you use the negative formulation. When you say do not kill, it feels narrow and without a lot of wiggle room. It's very directive. There's sometimes people turn the precepts around to make them more positive. So another more positive way of stating this precept is to say, "I resolve not to kill, but to cherish all life." And when you formulate it that way, it is less rote and engages the whole person. In a lot of ways, it asks more from you than the negative formulation, but it's less clear. And that's where you have to engage the middle way. So, cherish all life. Let's talk about cherishing life. I think I said at the beginning that I am part of Third Act Oregon. I joined because I believe climate change is the biggest threat to life. I feel a little sick when I think about it. So I needed to be actively working to reverse it, and it really helps me to be involved with this organization. Before I became a Buddhist, I was already cutting back on my meat consumption because I was worried about climate change. I knew that 80% of soybeans, one of the largest crops in the world, are fed mostly to livestock. Soybean and palm oil plants are replacing the Brazilian rainforest. It's because the money you can make from these crops is lucrative, and soybean feeds livestock, and palm oil goes into junk food. So the first meat I gave up was pork. I had seen some of the stories about giant pig farms in the Carolinas, and they had these open lagoons where they put the pig waste. So I said goodbye to bacon. And the next thing to go was beef. And it wasn't until I became a Buddhist that I just said, okay, no more, no more of this. I haven't collected all the numbers about about the carbon that you save if you don't eat meat. But it's a lot, and it's equivalent. I often see it stated as equivalent to not driving. So for myself, it was a relief to finally just say no more meat, and I haven't missed it. And in fact, what I have felt, especially over time, it's just kind of a feeling of relief. Think there's often, modern life often has a kind of a tail on it. It's you're dragging along, that you're not looking at it, so you don't realize that you've got you're pulling a card or you're dragging a tail or whatever, however you want to say it or imagine it. And I think that was one where there was a lightening of my load when I finally did that. But there are many things you can do to cherish life besides give up meat. Even though I'm saying, hey, it's a pretty good way. I've got a whole bunch of other things I do, some of them very minor, that I do just because of climate change and wanting to cherish life. For example, and I'm just giving you these examples because I think we'll go into a breakout here pretty soon. And I want you guys to have not be thinking, ah, oh, she wants me to talk about vegetarianism, but there's a lot of other ways. And for one thing, I just want to open your mind to what things in your life you do already to cherish life, or what things you're thinking about doing. So I buy expensive recycled paper, toilet paper, because I don't want the northern arboreal forest to be cut down. And I do this strange new thing where I wipe down my jeans with a sponge rather than wash them every 3 days. And my jeans last longer and they're just fine. So there are a lot of things, and also there's a lot of things I haven't done. I haven't gotten an electric car yet. I haven't electrified my home. And I still like to fly. Boy, that's a hard one to give up. So, anyways, I have been talking for a while, and so I was thinking we could do some breakouts. I'm pretty sure that all of you have thoughts on this topic. You even went through a teaching with Domio about climate change recently. But the questions that I'd like to see you ask each other and talk about is, so I'll say these a couple times because I don't have a PowerPoint or anything. What do you do to cherish life? What are you thinking about doing? What is difficult, but maybe it is required of you so that you are not off by a hair, as that poem I quoted earlier said. So let me say those again. What do you do to cherish life? What are you thinking about doing? What is difficult, but maybe it is, you feel it is required of you so that you are not off by a hair, that you are actually following the way. So, Paul?
Yeah, so we'll open up rooms, shoot for about 12 minutes, and then I'll call you back.
Okay. I'll try not to swear anymore. No. So anyway, I like to make jokes and you guys can laugh at them if you want. So anyway, yeah, so I was saying that I try not to so what kinds of things did people come up with in your groups? Does anybody want to just share, do a shout out or Bruce?
Yeah, we talked about how cherishing life includes loving your family and being kind and benevolent to everybody. I mean, it's just part of, that's a huge part of Buddhism. So I just admitted I'm not a vegetarian. So am I creating bad karma, like eating meat? I don't know. I could, if I turn vegetarian, I'd probably lose more weight, and I can ill afford to lose any more weight. That would be a major health problem for me. So anyway, that's about what we did.
Thanks, Bruce. That seems important. Anyone else?
Judith.
Oh, John, you've got your hand up.
Judith, we see you. We see you.
So, can you hear me?
Judith, I'll get to you eventually.
I'm gonna go sit back.
No. Let's
Other
let John talk and then you can go next.
All right, can you hear me?
Yes.
All right. So many people in our group were vegetarians or vegans, and watched their plastic use and energy and things like that. One of the things which pointed out was pet food is mostly made of meat and needs to be made of meat. So that's something that's hard for people to get around. And the other thing I was kind of had a question, which was, you're saying if you're off by a hair, difference between earth and heaven. So is it really down to, make the right choice or you're off by hair and you're hosed here? Or does that mean something different? So.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't figured it out yet, but I do know that oftentimes the masters will talk about that, walking along a ridge or along a knife edge. And so, that I'm what I choose, how I'm choosing right now to interpret it, and I'm just, I'm just a person here. Is that the middle way isn't necessarily going to be the easy way. And I often think of it in terms of like the illumination path that we were talking about last month, which was basically you're not making this choice, you're allowing things to come through. You're not falling asleep either. You're alert, and that takes energy, and there's choices to be made. And I think that sometimes for some people, a certain path will start to narrow down. That's about as close as I can get. But I just wanted to inject a little urgency in it, because that's what the masters often do. They will have a couple lines like that, just kind of that almost contradict what they said before, because they're just like, okay, you guys, if this isn't like an easy thing. Judith.
That's fine. She's not going to be big. It's connected to the other laptop.
Oh, hi, are you there?
Yes, we're there.
Okay. We have, and our group was filled with killers. ants and aphids. All the spiders were taken outside. But the aphids are put on the roses by the ants, because the ants farm aphids. That's where they get their nectar. And so the question becomes, what is our obligation? Save the roses or save the aphids? Thank you.
I don't feel like I have to answer that question. So let's see. I've got Brian up here in the corner, my corner.
I don't know how to follow that. Basically, Benny and me were both talking for a while. both vegetarian, me about 25, 30 years. You know, I kind of chuckle. I mean, I know it's not about vegetarianism, but, you know, and when I asked my daughter what she's a vegetarian too, what she meant by a vegetarian, she says, well, anything that doesn't have a mother, you know, doesn't have a face. And that's because she personalized it quite a bit. But it's how we got into it is that in the vegetarian aspect, looking at how much of the environment, water, grain, and everything is required to generate 1 kilogram of red meat. It's just enormous compared to what you would actually have to do grain itself, or protein, or anything like that. So that was one extreme. But we didn't, we thought the axiom to do not kill, you know, cultivate, encourage life, and that was the more important aspect to us, at least just to us, and that at least if we were eating or we were having something, whether it's vegetarian, knowing that what's in front of you, all it took to get it there, transportation costs, like thinking at it from all the stuff that goes together that hurts the environment in order to get it to your table and for you to eat it. And that really it was more important for us to dwell on what's good in the cultivating and, you know, nurturing part of it than actually the death part of it. It was like, you know, like, yes, I have a choice. If I have a choice, I can have this, which is hurts the environment, or I can not have this, you know. I mean, I got an electric car. That's not, I mean, you're saying, well, actually, maybe electric car. No, because the battery, amount of harm the battery does to create that electric car is worse than oil and gas. I mean, so it's how you look at it. It's all different perspectives of how you look at it. So we thought the second part about cultivating and encouraging life is where we choose to place our emphasis. That's all.
Thank you, Brian. So, Alice, are you? I can't see the dirt zendo very well. So, is someone waiting there to speak? No. Okay. Jessica.
Hi. So, in our group, we were talking about the for us the difficult part of this is in daily life, and to do the review each evening of in what ways did by speech or thought or conduct did I kill something today? And this can go down to a very subtle level. In what ways did I not encourage life where I could have? And at least for me, it's in this daily application is where the challenge is. I mean, there are the larger decisions that we've, you know, the group has talked about, like whether or not to eat meat or fly, what kind of car to drive. And those are important things. And yet for us, we felt that the challenge really came down in the daily life aspect of it. Thank you.
So your group felt like the smaller decisions were pretty important. Is that what you meant? Yeah.
Yes. And to every, you know, to each day examine what transpired that day and in what subtle, and I'm getting this from Nancy Mujo Baker, actually, mm-hmm. you know, in the, what she says in her book that we were asked to read. And it's a difficult practice. That's where we thought the crux of it really lay in daily life.
Katie, I think Ruth Ann wanted to join in.
Oh,
thank you.
Hi, thanks. I had to switch phones. My other one wouldn't let me unmute. Thanks for the talk. Actually, I love that you read the poem from Lee's book, and that hairline reference reminds me of there's a phrase in the Bible be neither hot nor cold. There's no maybe in commitment. But because we're human beings, we only live in the moment. So when we don't come from the full integrity we hope we do, that's when, I don't know, for myself, I thought, oh, I could have handled that better, or I could have made a better choice. But when I hear that line in the poem about the hairline difference between us, it's like we make a commitment as a Buddhist. That doesn't mean we're never going to wonder about our behavior, like Domio's teacher Yoko Carlson said, bring your life to Zen. So as Bruce said for me, I was thinking also about I cherish life and how I listen to people that might be saying something I totally disagree with, but to have the patience to see from their point of view what they're saying, and I don't judge in that moment, but take the moment as it is an experience to perhaps connect. Thank you so much for this talk tonight and everyone's wisdom.
Thank you, Ruth. Anne?
Go ahead, Yo.
So, in our group, we talked about some basic stuff and, some kind of obvious things, which is, at least in my case, anything that flies into my house stays in my house. I mean, I just can't get rid of them. I can't, I just live with the bugs because I cannot bring myself to kill them. They have a short lifespan, and then I just gather them in piles and then throw them out or vacuum them up once they die. But I can't bring myself to kill anything. But one of the other things that I found very interesting and resonated with me in the book that we're reading is that she gives a lot of examples of killing in respect to the precepts, and one of them is killing time. And that, at least in the place where I am right now, which is, I'm in a weird place, but I do a lot of that. And I think that I'm trying to get out of this funk and trying to do more with the time that I do have, and putting it into that perspective in the fact that I'm just killing time. That's really what I'm doing. I'm not doing anything with this time that I have that I could put to way more use. And I don't know, that just really resonated to me, and looking at it that way has really made an impact. Actually, since I read it within the last couple of days, I've already made some changes. So that was really good. Anyways, that's it.
Thank you. Okay. Leah, did you want to say something?
I was because bugs have come up a couple of times, the example I wanted to give is that before Buddhism, I would have the spider reaction that comes from your gut, that comes quick. You give no thought to it, and you see a spider, and your brain says spider, and you kill it because it's scary as heck. Or if it's a really big spider, you throw something at it so that you don't have to get too close. you don't want to feel it, with your, anyway, but that was just the way I was. And a lot of people are like this, but the weird thing is I've been observing over time, especially after taking the precepts, that it changed, and that gut reaction to the spider is different. Now I will save it carefully and take it outside. And I think that it's such a small thing, and there are a whole lot of other big things to talk about, but it's these small things that I think are an example of how It happens organically. I think over time, as you come to be more, you think more about these things and what effects your actions have, and trying to be more compassionate and loving person. You know, these things just sort of start to change themselves from the inside out. And I like to think about compassion not being only directed toward the spider, but being directed toward myself. And saying, hey, in the moment, you made this choice. You know, like someone mentioned before, you can only be totally in the moment and make a choice. And if you did the right thing and you chose life, then you did the right thing in the moment. And then you can move to the next one and hopefully continue to choose life in big ways and small ways too. So that's.
Thanks, Leah. I mean, thanks everyone. You guys really ran with it. I think we've only got like 4 more minutes. I had some stuff that I, and just in case, when I, after we came back from breakout, everyone just looked at me. I had some other stuff that had to do with like changing your habits, because then that even came up in our breakout room, was just like, sometimes if you want to do something big, it's a little difficult to make that transition. So, but I don't have time for that really, but just that would be a good topic sometime, I think, to talk about habits, because I think Buddhism has something to say about that. So anyway, let's see. Leah, you've got your hand up still? Did you mean that? No. Okay.
Oh, yeah. I did. And I just thought maybe we should have some sort of, you know, how we have a book group and we have a, you know, little groups for things. And maybe we should have a vegetarian group where we, I don't know, like if there's aspiring vegetarians, then
come share to us recipes.
Right. Exactly. Because sometimes it's hard. You just don't know what to do. Anyway, it's just an idea.
No, it's a great idea. Yeah. Oh, Jay, did you have one more thing?
Yeah, I did. My takeaways this evening is that this precept is about vegetarianism and killing spiders, or not killing spiders. I'm kidding. But there is a common thread, I guess, a thing that jumped out at me. And, you know, it's a lot of setting these two examples, you know, talking about, oh, I do this or I don't do this, and engaging with it. And I guess the common thread that comes to me is that the gateway of contrition, the avowing your negative, your timeless negative karma, do what you can and then look in the face what you can't. Like, well, that's where I'm at. I had a gut reaction, killed a spider. That's where I at. That's where I'm at. I ate meat today. That's where I'm at. That's a thing. I don't know. That's just like a common thread I'm seeing.
Jade, thank you. That was, yeah. I mean, maybe that's what the knife edge or the thread is more about.
Maybe.
The fact that you're able to move forward from moment to moment. Well, it's almost 9 o'clock. There's one more minute. Domio, is there more that I should do here this evening, or is there
do you have the little closing verse?
I don't. I was just talking about that. Like a lotus in muddy water. That's the only thing I can remember.
I guess we should send it out to all the class leaders. I mean, it's not complicated, but it's like, so we dedicate the merit of this Sangha meeting to all, so that they may be able to obtain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time. All honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha. Thanks, Katie.
Thanks, Katie. Hey,
everybody.
I always forget that she was a.